Hi, my name is Julian Smith.
Fuck yeah!
I don't know who you are, but you know me, that's good. I guess I was asked to present right now, just as a preamble. Actually, we'll do the preamble first, so. This should work, there we go. So preamble, trust agents. I'm currently working on a book with another blogger called Chris Brogan, who some of you may know. The book is titled, it's going to be titled Trust Agents. The idea being is that there's a bunch of stuff that happens on the web that helps build trust and helps build influence. And while some people know what it is, and generally we've had many conversations with bloggers, and we feel that many bloggers know, or not just bloggers, people on Twitter, people using social media, podcasters, know what to do in a way. There's also many people that don't, or they know some of the rules, but they could certainly know more of them. And so the idea being, if you're on the web, you can use certain tools to help build trust, either in yourself or in an organization that you work for, and help build influence so that you can have more leverage in the online world and in the real world. So that's the preamble. This, who's over 35? Oh, crap. Who doesn't recognize this thing here? Yeah, I don't recognize it. Okay, so this is a screenshot from Super Mario Brothers 1, which was launched in 1982. In World 1-2, as you can see over there on the top, if you kind of jump up, because this is the end of the level, is actually right over here. Normally you would go into a pipe, and that would be the end of the level. But if you actually went above and sort of jumped onto the top, onto what's kind of the roof in a way, you could walk past this thing that says Mario, walk past your own little sort of stuff at the top that theoretically you shouldn't be able to even get to, and then come down to this thing, and it says, welcome to Warp Zone. So this is the Warp Zone, welcome to Warp Zone. It's where the first time you find it, you're like, oh, okay, so here's all this kind of secret stuff. There's a whole kind of other system of things that I just figured out. It's a very exciting feeling when you kind of put those two things together and get an idea that, you know, oh, instead of just going to World 1-3, which would theoretically be the next level, I can go straight to World 2, to World 3, or World 4, and get ahead in the game faster. So this is about, and the book is potentially about, getting ahead in the game faster. Life is a game. And when I say game, I don't mean this. Game of life. I don't mean that. I mean this. I mean looking at a video game, and a lot of what we do is based on the idea of video games. We see things as a system, like the Matrix, right? It's a terrible reference, I know, I'm sorry about that, but it's true. There are references, something happens once you come to understand how people work and how systems work, and you come to be able to, I think exploit is the wrong word, but certainly to be able to see why people move in certain directions, why certain trends happen ahead of time, and they allow you to position yourself in the right way. So this is Mario over here. You can see him over here. He's got the little ears because he has a little raccoon tail and he can fly. And this is the paper boat, I think is what it's called. And it's one of the things that only appears about one out of every 200 times you play the game. But somehow he's managed to make it appear. This is also a map. It gives you a general idea of what the overview is before you actually, you know, continue ahead. In the first game, you didn't have a map. You just went World 1, World 2, World 3, and passed over and over and over again. But here, you could decide. Over here in the first M, when you pass that level, that's World 1-1, and then here's World 1-2, World 1-2. You could skip all of this if you wanted to here on the right and go straight down to this. It gives you a number of options when you actually see the map. And normally, people do not see the map. They don't have the 10,000 feet vision. They just kind of like, okay, so here I am at the pod camp, for example, because we're all here, as we are all here, right? So if we're all here, like, what's the next thing that we're supposed to be doing? First of all, let's talk about the myth of general social media. The myth is it's a group hug. This is the group hug. Everybody is friends. It's true that everybody is friends, but it's not true that we all unconditionally love each other. You know what I mean? Like, some people find me fucking annoying, and I don't. understand that. I do. They're like, when are you going to put out a stupid podcast, Julian? And they're right about that, too. So it's like we're not family, family, hug, hug, and even your family. I mean, you guys know, you know, you love them. But God, sometimes you hate them, you know? The relationships are more complicated than what they originally, like, are seen to be on the surface, right? Like, I don't know why this came to mind, but Malcolm in the Middle, it's just like the example of the worst family ever. Everyone kind of hates each other and plays tricks on each other all the time. This is not really what social media is, but I'm just saying things are more complex than they seem. And even though we are much of a family, like, I love Cece, everybody here that I met, I say like. There's people that I'm closer to. I love Marco and Mitch, you know? And then it's just like, thank you, they're both bald. It's just like, I look down, I'm like, yes. It's good. It's because I can see myself in them. The reality of social media is more like this. This is actually, it's funny, I didn't realize when I took this picture off Flickr that it was from Montreal. A couple of blocks from here, there's about 6 chessboards like this. And it's generally old dudes playing in the sun, and so, I mean, it's not an issue of confusing old people, which is also what this might look like. It has more to do with looking down from above and seeing that, okay, here's a choice of what my moves should be. And this is the kind of thinking that we need to do. I came from a lot of background of games. I sort of grew up just as the first Nintendo was coming out. And I love chess, and I became a very good chess player. I play a martial arts kind of game that's called capoeira. It comes from Brazil, and it's a combination of a martial art and a game at the same time. So me and games quite get along well. And I mean, generally, once you come to see that all aspects of life are different games, then you come to learn something different about them, I think. So with that strategy, there is death. These are the 4 Pac-Man ghosts. This is Shadow, Speedy, Bashful, and Pokey. And you can't, it's a little dark here. But without the strategy and understanding what each of these ghosts do, you're just like, well, there's 4 ghosts and they're chasing me and I don't know. Everybody understands Pac-Man, right? We can work on this? Okay. So, but the real strategy is, the reality is, they all have little funny names like Shadow, Speedy, Bashful, and Pokey. But what that really means is that Shadow is the chaser. He'll chase you no matter what. That's what he does, that ghost. And the next ghost is the ambusher. So he, whenever you're going into a little nook and cranny on the corner of the screen, he'll go around you and try to grab you from the front. And then you've got Bashful, who's the fickle one. So he might actually just, for the whole game, be on the opposite side of the board. And then you've got the stupid one. That's really what people call him. He's the stupid one. He'll stop randomly, you know. They all have personalities, and it's something that you kind of need to understand. But that gives you an idea of strategy and what it is that you can do. This is Billy Mitchell. He has a mullet which goes down to here. And this is an American flag tie, and he is the world Pac-Man player. He has been the best Pac-Man player in the whole world. He's played the only perfect game of Pac-Man. Touched every single piece, gotten every little, you know, fruit that shows up randomly, killed every ghost in the game ever. And even though you may not want to emulate or look like this guy at all, and I totally understand that, what you do want to do is the way he plays the game is he actually puts transparent acetate on top of the screen in order to get an idea of where the ghosts are going and how it is he should be moving, and then he plans his game based on that. So don't look like this guy. I really mean that. Don't do that. But anyway, so let's talk about what defines a game. We can go. There's a lot of stuff. This is very open-ended, but there's a lot of stuff that is. I want to get into what you guys think about this afterwards. But what defines a game, and what defines, like, what is important about it, and what makes it different from just regular daily life, going to work and stuff like that. But number one, it is played for fun. You don't play a game unless it's fun. Sometimes games are very difficult to play. So you'll play a game and you'll be like, okay, you know, even though I keep dying on this level over and over and over again, I'm dying. But even so, you keep going to get to the end. As long as you're still having fun, then it's an important thing to do. We come here because we want to get together, because we think that it's an enjoyable thing to do. The fact that it is fun keeps us here, keeps us in a community. We love what we do and we love getting together. If something is not played for fun, don't do it. It's not worth it, ever. Number 2, games have simplified rules to represent reality. Whenever you look at a set of games, like you say Dungeons and Dragons, obviously it's not real people. They don't have real gravity, and they don't really weigh, you know, 155 pounds, whatever, you know. They're not really strong in a way that human beings are strong, but every character is a representation of a real person. So we represent, for example, his dexterity is from 3, which is the lowest dexterity score, to 18, and that's a simplified version of what reality is like. It shows you different aspects, okay? So the guy who's the most awkward, he's the one who falls all over the place. I had an ex-girlfriend like this, like she dropped like 5 phones every year. Dropped a phone in water, she knocked against tables for no reason. We went out for 4 years, you don't wanna know. But it's a representation of reality which is simplified. And so you wanna generally look at, okay, so what's happening in front of me? What am I going through right now? And how can I take that and simplify it into a set of, I guess, abstract rules in my head so I can understand what it is that I should be doing, what the next step is. And so the rules of the game are based on what kind of game you're playing. So that is for each single person, you know. We're all in a different niche. Me and Cece, we do, I used to do, and Cece still does, music podcasts. So what happens in the music podcasting space? Well, generally, we try not to talk too much between things because people are there for the music, ostensibly, right? So in the game of social media, it's all about people. People are the center of the game. They are the pieces in the game. We are all pieces in a game, and they're all doing things differently. And what happens is you get a set of rules, which are, number one, be nice. People, what you want, you know, we get along. You're not going to get along if you're an asshole. If you're a douchebag to me, I'm going to hate you too. This seems to make sense. The bigger your network is, the wider your reach. So no matter what your goal is, you're going to find yourself in a position where you're like, man, I really wish I could, I don't know, attend this conference. Or actually, a perfect example is finding yourself on Twitter, stuck in the airport and going, I'm stuck in the airport, and my plane got canceled, what am I going to do? CC does this, he has around 6,000 followers on Twitter now, but he had less at the time, and they figured it out. They sent him a limo. They sent him a limo. They got him from the airport into the limo into some hotel somewhere. What is this, Baltimore or something?
Oh, New York, yeah. New York. Took the family so I could go clothes shopping because we were stuck for 2 days. We were stuck in JFK on family vacation, going down for February vacation, and our clothes were in Nashville, and we were stuck in New York. So, yeah, they sent a town car, and I went to Target, and you know, and then dinner arrived. And it was all through me twittering one thing of, shit, I'm stuck in JFK. It wasn't help me, it was, I'm stuck in JFK, this sucks. And the next thing I know, I get a phone call saying, Calvary's on the way. I'm like, what the hell is going on?
Exactly. The wider, the bigger your network is, whether your network is small, and in terms of like each individual follow on Twitter, you're like, what's the big deal? It's not a big deal, right? But as your network expands, the influence that network has is incredibly powerful. The more personal the relationship, the better. So don't send out form emails to people. Don't hand your person your business card as the first thing you do. Have a relationship with them. Speak to them, and you know, only speak to them if you actually care. Don't be a douchebag and don't be fake. Social proof is another rule, which is a little bit more complicated, but it's the idea that nobody will do anything unless someone else has done it first. So if people are wondering, for example, why, I don't know, somebody really popular who has a very famous blog has never referenced your blog, it's because no one they know has referenced your blog before that. And that becomes sort of a vicious circle, and it becomes an idea of, well, no one really wants to be the first one, everyone wants to follow along with what the trend is. This is something that happens to people all the time. For example, there was a study where there were 3 people in a room. All of them were briefed as to what it is they had to do. Very simple, there are 2 lines on a board. One of them is clearly the longer line. One of them is clearly the shorter line. But the 2 first people who are in the room are actually plants, they're assistants. And even though the person who's heading up the thing says, so what line is this? And the guy at the beginning who's a plant, he's like, well, this is the longer line. And he points to the shorter line. And then the second person does it again and points to a shorter line, even though they say it's the longer line. The third person, who is not a plant and is a normal person, will say, yeah, that's the longer line. They will. For some reason, who knows why, because we've never been in that situation, but that's social proofing. It's getting other people, and all of a sudden it's more easy to convince people because someone else has already gone along with it. And there's any number of rules based on what our game is and what game we decide to play. There's this thing, this is the best. This was taken by Jane McGonigal, and she is a game designer, a very famous one, spoke South by Southwest, and she was basically like, she took a picture of this, it says, "I'm not good at life," in a women's washroom somewhere while she was traveling. And she designs games, and the idea with games is that they are measurable. I don't know how good the lunch I had with my friend was. Maybe there was some awkward stuff, maybe he brought up something that wasn't exactly the nicest thing to say to me. How did that work out? Answer, we kind of know, but we have no system for really putting it into place and figuring out whether it was positive, how many points positive was it? Was it negative? We don't know. And if there's different systems, like how do we figure that out? So that is rules for advancement and goals. So anybody who didn't understand what that was is definitely... Everybody gets this? So you get this? Okay, good, great. I'm going to leave that up for a couple seconds. So that okay, we're back.
What's one up?
Goals, points, all sorts of different things that allow you to measure it. And so the idea is you have different things that allow you to figure out whether you're doing the right thing or not. And that is something that no one will ever teach you. Well, hopefully, as we write a book, we'll be able to help teach you what the kind of quote-unquote rules are. But I mean, in a way, no one will ever truly know all of them. Games make things easier and allow us to use all of our faculties. So in an emotional relationship and an emotional game that is a social game, we can all use our emotional intelligence, but we can't use our analytical intelligence because that's based on things that are numbers and based on things that are easy to say, this is black and this is white, as opposed to many, many shades of gray. Putting things into the rules of a game allows you to see what other ways you could be doing things. In social games and in any kind of social interaction, we know that this is a puzzle and we know what the shape of a puzzle is. We know what the point is, and because the shape of each puzzle piece is easy to figure out, and because we have a big map of it, we can eventually see what all of those things come and become. But here, in this social game, we don't know what those pieces are, what they look like. It's not as easy as a puzzle piece, so how do we know when it is that we have the right piece in our hand, and how do we know whether we do or not? We are saying that the one piece is something called social capital. So what is social capital, right? Social capital is described, I think, one of the first times by a sociologist writing in a book called Bowling Alone, The Collapse and Revival of American Community. And the idea being is it's a very powerful image, right? It's a guy bowling by himself instead of bowling in a team because people don't go out as much in the American culture. They hang out by themselves at their house and they watch television instead. They may go and vote for American Idol and their favorite person by text messaging or something, but they're still hanging out by themselves. So his theory is that social capital, the individual things that happen between people, aren't happening anymore because people are hanging out by themselves more and more. We think that it's the opposite. We think these people and this room right now, we are the new tribe and we are the new community. So forget about bowling. Bowling, that was good because people got along and it was a sport. They got along because it was a certain interest they had. But people all over the world, people all over, everywhere here, we're all getting together because we are a new form of tribe that is, as of yet, kind of unanalyzed. And I mean, that's good because it means no rules for us. It means it's easy. We can get along and do whatever we want, So a joke is social capital. I tell a joke to somebody I know. If they hopefully think that joke is funny, then they pass that along to five other people. I have gained social capital by telling that person, and that person gains social capital by passing it along to five more people. So a joke is an example of social capital. So is giving someone or buying somebody a coffee. So is sharing a laugh over a funny joke. And so is a link on the internet. So every time that you link to someone, you are sending them traffic, right? So all of that is tiny little favors that occur and that we don't really pay attention to, and we do them as normal human beings because we have fun doing them. It's being part of a community, and it's being part of something bigger, something that we all do here, and we fly all over the country in some cases to go to pod camps and to really connect with people, and all of that is social capital, and it's all in some way traffic. So our goal in the social game is to facilitate social capital exchange. Just like bowling alone, you can't get any friends if you don't go bowling with the guys on the Sunday. So you have to come and attend these places. You have to come to these places and come hang out with us and be a part of the community. And it's by doing that that you accumulate what I am calling points, but we can never really turn it into that. That makes it cheap. What it really is, it's a sense of community, but you know you're doing the right thing when you're accumulating social capital, when you're capable of doing favors for your fellow man, that kind of thing. So this is what you end up figuring out and kind of going, you know, that's what you go for at the end of the day. It's the one thing that brings people together. So the value of the web is the fact that you can be everywhere. Instead of just handing somebody a coffee, you can write a blog post or you can create a podcast, and that podcast goes to everyone. So you're creating social capital, or like telling a joke, to everyone in the world all at once. And then people later on, they can go through Google and then they can find your social capital. And then, so once, as you connect with one person and then another person, you had to do the work one time. But then it connects with hundreds of people over a period of weeks or months or whatever, you know? It allows you to be everywhere, and it allows you to create stuff that is visible to everyone. And because you're creating value, not just for one person anymore, in private, you're now doing it for a number of people all at once, and all of those people are gaining value. The real idea is all exchanges that create value are also creating social capital. It should actually maybe be the other way around. Any exchange that creates social capital is actually creating value for another human being. So unless you're doing good to another person, then you're not creating social capital, you're not doing the right thing. And this is true in market exchanges as well. Generally, you say that you can't, people say anyway, that you can't be making money unless you are making more money for someone else. So in almost all cases, unless, I don't know, you're a spammer or something, then, you know, you're creating value to someone else, and therefore you allow yourself to create value as well. Anyway, all of that creates influence, and that brings us back to the map, right? You have a map. You have a better idea of what's going on. Gives you an idea of what the 10,000 feet kind of picture is. Okay, so there I got the paper boat to appear. It's actually filled with coins. It gives you tons of lives. It's awesome. If you never get it to appear, it's because you didn't know how to do it. You may not even have known that it existed, but now it's right there. And you could just, it actually kind of floats around, and if you miss it, it may be gone by the next time that you finish a level. So you have to watch out for that thing, you have to know that it's coming, and then you have to know how to kind of like draw it closer to you. And I can't say what your rules are for each of you individuals. All of you are playing different games, but all of us can definitely gain an advantage by figuring out what that game is, what the point systems are, and how it is that I can get to the next level. And that's how you level up. That's it for now. Everybody. Anybody want to say anything? Anybody have any questions? Or is that too dense for everyone? Does anyone? No one gets anything.
First of all, thank you very much, man. That was very thought provoking. And so the idea of you're saying to that you have to come and attend events like this, and I totally agree. Isn't it also about that you need to attend events and you need to bring value to the things you're attending or the whatever else you're doing? So can you speak to that? What are the ways really that you bring that value? And I'm sorry, part of it also is continuing to build your own skills in whatever area you're in so that you have more value to bring. But how do you bring that value? I know you can comment on blogs, you come here, you engage in conversations. What are the other ways really concretely to bring that value?
I mean, that's a good question. I think every individual kind of has to be true to themselves, right? So as we go back and forth in terms of what it is that we're discussing, we have to in order to discuss some things which are kind of easy to discuss, like like points and like kind of like easy square systems, the blocks that fit one next to each other. We also have to discuss soft things. So some ways, some things that I'm going to mention, you just can't describe in, you know, I can't say them in an easy way. But I think every single person has to be true to themselves and authentic. Otherwise, it all comes across wrong. We all know the person. I mean, maybe some of you have met one here. I hope it wasn't me. That was totally like, you didn't, when you connected with them, it wasn't right. You're like, who? I don't understand. Maybe this person is presumptuous. Like, who knows, right? But if you're being inauthentic, or if you're being arrogant or something like that, you're not fulfilling your, I guess, what your role is. And what you want to be doing is, everybody wants to look for that unique way in which they can create value for everyone, right? Or as many people as possible. What the internet allows us to do is connect with more people than ever, faster than ever, and in a more efficient way, right? The same way that we're going to ideally publish a book and it'll sell pretty well, hopefully, it'd be nice. That is something that, it's something that will then stand for us everywhere that we go. But it's been made once, and it's been, you know, repeated over and over again. So doing something like speaking at an event and creating value for everyone that's there is something that's definitely obviously valuable, you know? But that goes from the large exchange, which is something like this, to something that's small, like just giving someone a tip, right? And I think everybody kind of inherently knows what value that it is that they can bring, or they should at least be looking for it. And by figuring out what that is, then you get a better idea of how you can get closer to the community and help people and also help yourself in the process. Make sense? How are we on time here? Did I totally? Oh, shit.
Okay. 20 minutes.
Okay, so half an hour. Anyway, so I don't know exactly. Maybe we can start a discussion on the subject. Anybody want to bring anything up? I know it's a dense thing, but we think something that's kind of a big deal. Everybody comes in, you know, general idea of a group hug or whatever, but we also need to be thinking about what it is that we want to do for ourselves and others.
My question is, would I rather have 30 good friends and 6,000 people who know me? Is this for fame?
The answer is, you can have individual goals. Each person can have whatever it is that they want. But that said, if you have a cause, it certainly helps to know 6,000 people more than it helps to know one person. I worked for an organization called Homeless Nation for a while, and basically they give tons of cameras to street kids and to homeless people in order to get them to document their lives, which is something that we take for granted. We take for granted that we can take pictures and then show them to our grandkids, but it's something that they can't do. And so without leverage, without being able to kind of understand what it takes to get there, in this case probably government grants, we can never actually get to a position where we can help more people, right? So I understand the point about fame, and certainly fame should not be, I mean, maybe it is for some people, but I think if you're not going to take that and make it a, like turn it into a good cause, then there's no point. But if you can take it, then, you know, like, I don't know, just I think that applies differently to every person. But I think ultimately everybody is looking for some form of good for not only themselves, but the people they care about, right? It might not go all the way.
Well, first of all, speaking to the 30 and the 6,000, I think one of the worst things that happens to social software is the fact that we've used the term friend. It's not necessarily friends. It's people you connected with. It's people you have something in common with. It's not 30 friends, because of course I prefer hanging out with my 30 close friends in person than Twittering. But it's another thing. It's just that the terms were super badly chosen, although I can't think of something else. But in terms of social capital, basically, it's being nice to people.
In a way.
It might be being nice by producing something that they can enjoy. It might be being nice by giving them coffee or by telling a joke when they're feeling bad or whatever.
Feeling down, right. Yeah.
But isn't it a bit like, how do you pronounce the name, Schrodinger's cat? That when you observe something, it changes it?
That's right.
When you're making an effort to gain social capital, doesn't it taint the good?
Yeah. I think I don't know that anyone is at that point, but certainly becoming aware of it, but not always paying attention to it, is maybe the best thing. Like, just become aware of what the game is. Then don't play the game to get points, play the game to have fun, and play the game to connect with people. But don't always be thinking, oh, what's the next thing that I could be doing? How can I take advantage of this? No. So maybe you set yourself up some goals, like, oh, I would totally like to connect with this person, and I hope I can get a one-on-one conversation with them for 10 minutes, and get their opinion on X or Y thing, you know? And any, I mean, there's, I totally see your point, that once you see the game, it's almost like, oh, now what? I can't take away this lesson. Like, you can't enjoy the Matrix if you're not fully in the Matrix. It's certainly something you can grapple with, but I don't know. I feel like all the people that we've definitely talked with a lot of people on the internet, and I think that a lot of us are still capable of seeing the system that we exist within without being slaves to it in a way. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
You? He's too smart.
I guess maybe a follow-up to Patrick's comment there, when I started LibriVox, I was interviewed by some guy at some point, and there was sort of this question, like, why did you do this? Why are you spending all this time doing something that you're not getting any financial reward from? And I think the answer was really that's the kind of world that I want to live in. It's a world where there are free audiobooks and free insight. And so if you look at it that way, the answer is sort of, this is the kind of world that I want to live in. And I've recently started a new project. And over the last few years, you know, when people have new projects, they try to help out and make suggestions about the website or user interface or whatever stuff that I can contribute to them. And it turns out I invited some friends to give some comments on my new project. And the feedback was just amazing. I had so many people offering to help, you know, can I do this for you, can I do that? And I mean, it's not like a mercenary sort of approach where I said, you know, I've been felt good, you know, finally it's paying off all the nice things that I've done and I've been cashing in on it. But it's just that's the universe that I think is the kind of universe that I'd like to live in. And I think maybe that's an approach to it, is that you have to see that it's better for you and better for everyone if you're giving, you end up receiving a lot in exchange for it.
So the total opposite example of that is like the miser who sits there with everything that he has but doesn't help anyone at all, right? So in fact, when you're doing good things for people, when you're creating exchanges like that, like when you plan your bowling league for the week, you're doing things that really are good for everyone. You know, everyone benefits out of it. It's not the kind of thing where I give you $1, now I have $1 less. It is social exchanges create opportunity for everyone to become richer at once. And that's the benefit that we have in communities as opposed to market exchanges. So market exchanges are here's the stuff that you need, give me the stuff I need, now I'm walking away and going home, and we all turn our backs to each other and stab each other in the back or something, right? But in communities, we all become richer through the things that benefit one person.
Julian, Dave Delaney wants to repeat the questions in the mic. He's taking care of the
stream. Whose question?
So I think an interesting insight that what you said here is that, you know, the internet and also gaming provides a way for social capital to come out. And really, the social economy is an older form of economy than the market-based economy that we've invented, you know, ever since the sort of 16th century or so. And that's something really interesting. Like, I'd like to hear your thoughts on how, you know, the internet and gaming have provided this resurgence in an older form of economy of sharing with each other.
Yeah, sure. I mean, Jane McGonigal in our talk, I saw her in the I Suck at Life thing, is the kind of person that thinks that happiness is the new market that we're all getting into. Right? So that is another way of seeing this as well, is seeing, I think, okay, so we're all trying to build a benefit for kind of the community. We've come together willingly, every single one of us. You know, we weren't forced to come here at all. We all came together. Now let's be good to one another. And this is kind of a way to be able to look at that. So in terms of the social economy coming before the market economy, of course it's true. But back then, we would only deal with the tribe. You know, it's only recently that we've come to trust strangers in any way. That is a new thing that has happened over the past 200 years. Before that, if somebody wasn't part of your family, you did not care about them, and you would not trust their word in any way. This is new. We not only 99% of the people that we see on a daily basis are strangers, but we have to create whole new relationships that are not based on I came out of your womb, right? You know what I'm saying? Exactly. So it's a whole, we're going back to the old stuff, yes, but it's also entirely new because none of us have really interacted or wanted to be with strangers and meet new people as much as we do now. Right?
Hey, Jolene, how you doing?
Hey, how are you?
Good. In terms of how are we doing in social capital, there's an expression in the market-based economy, certainly in the entertainment business and the music business, it's all about who you know, but more importantly, it's about who knows you. It's not a matter of how many people you know, it's how many people would return your phone call, many people will get back to you, and that's sort of how you know how you're doing. And when Hugh got up, he got immediate response because he has a vision that is something that benefits everybody. Like one of our little IndieCan slogans is, we're all in this together. It's all a bunch of do-it-yourself musicians trying to make their own way, but it's about building a community. And it's so much easier to, you know, network when you've got something that, you know, you're planting a seed for a shade tree you'll never sit on. Mm-hmm. Right? It's going to benefit somebody else.
Yeah.
And you know, having something to say, I think, is where it starts.
Absolutely, yeah. And I mean,
in terms of people picking up the phone when you call, that becomes, it's through doing good that you do that. If you're the guy who calls and is always offering an investment tip, you're not exactly, you know, next time the phone is not going to get picked up, you know what I mean? It's pretty interesting, and you're totally right. There's a lot of different ways to kind of like, I don't know, it's a complex, certainly a complex subject, but good point.
So I follow the whole kind of Jesus kumbaya bit, but there's also money. I mean, people do this to further their career, further their business. I make no qualms about the fact that I blog and I podcast for free and I don't pin my stuff, but the end game is that people buy from me. I'm just wondering your thoughts on that and how that works in the economy and trust agents and stuff like that.
So what we're saying is okay, so there's a lot of people like that, right? You're obviously not just one of them. I would even argue that we could go all the way up and down the ladder, and like I would say Oprah is one of those people, that she sells advertisement to a group of people, or the, like NBC or whatever it is she's on, but then her actual group that she speaks to and gains influence from is a totally separate group of usually stay-at-home mothers, right? So I think it's a perfectly natural thing that's already emulated in the normal world. It's just we're doing it on a smaller scale. We're connecting with people generally because the relationships have to be personal because the media is personal. It's not a professional, you know, I no longer have to appeal to 30 million people. Now I just have to appeal to my own community, so I better get along with them, right? And, but then ultimately it's that connecting with that group of people, like you, you would certainly, obviously, you could pitch to agents, to other companies if you didn't know anyone in the community, but the fact that you know anyone in the community, you know how the digital space works, certainly helps your case. So it's the same thing with Oprah, the same thing with a lot of people. I think it fits in quite well. I don't think it's that big a deal. All right, so I guess we're good. I don't know what time it is.
43.
Okay, well, I'll give you guys a 15-minute break since you've been so nice.